I'm proud to be a Jew, but that's way too Jewish for me.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together of news, music, comedy, and conversation. Our guest this morning on Two Jewish is Mike Wise, the co-CEO of Honeymoon Israel, an incredible new program that takes newly married couples to Israel for an amazing experience. We'll also have visits from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price, our Two Jewish Mavenah on Israel, Oshrat Barel, and our Maven on Jewish Education, John Ben Asher. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. Or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. People always wonder how it is that we Jews have survived for so long. What is the source of our people's vitality over the 3,800 years of our existence? What's the secret to the Jewish ability to remain intact when no other religion or culture has endured from antiquity to today? How have we preserved our traditions, texts, and ideals from the Bronze Age to the iPhone era? The answer is pretty simple, and it's not lots of pastrami on rye or chopped liver. The fact is that for the past 2,000 years, the principal source of life, learning, and community for Jews has been the synagogue, whether it's called a temple, congregation, shul, or kehillah. The synagogue is the only institution that guarantees that Judaism will survive and thrive from one generation to the next. Times of joy and sadness, of peril or celebration, it is the synagogue that is the single indispensable institution in Jewish life. There are many excellent Jewish organizations in the world that do good and important work. In my rabbinate, and often here on Two Jewish, we work closely with lots of them on a regular basis and partner with all of the local Jewish organizations in a variety of ways. But if, God forbid, they all disappeared and we only had synagogues left, well, Judaism would survive and ultimately succeed. On the other hand, if all of these fine Jewish organizations continue to function, but we were forced into even one generation without synagogues, Judaism would simply disappear. Without temples, there would be no more Judaism. With strong temples, Judaism thrives, grows, and evolves in healthy, vibrant, creative ways. Within the walls and work of the temple, we celebrate life cycle events from Brit Milah to baby namings to B'nai Mitzvah to confirmation to weddings to anniversaries to funerals. Within the walls and work of the temple, children learn the joys of Jewish festivals, master Hebrew and prayer, understand Torah and God. Within the walls and work of the temple, we learn and practice visiting the sick, feeding the hungry, housing the homeless, redeeming the oppressed, fighting for justice and peace. Within the walls and work of the temple, we sharpen our minds, open our hearts, stretch our spirits, and sing our own Jewish songs of identity and purpose. It's important to regularly recall the centrality of the synagogue in Jewish life because it's awfully easy to take the temple for granted. So, if you have a chance this coming week, go to temple or congregation or synagogue or shul, whatever you call it, and appreciate just what an incredible institution it really is. Along those lines, we recently had a summer salon program, a new one at my congregation, Temple Emmanuel, here in Tucson, Arizona, where I live. It focused on a fascinating cooperative of Jewish, Christian, and Muslim farmers in Uganda that produces wonderful coffee all together, and they market it here in the United States. It's called Delicious Peace Coffee. It helps the impoverished farmers of Uganda support their families and live better lives. In a world full of hostility and conflict, in which religious commitment seems to lead only to hatred, intolerance, and violence, this project shines as a light of remarkable cooperation and respect. The cooperative was started and is still led by a Jewish coffee farmer who's part of the Abu Yudaya, the Ugandan Jewish community. Although there are African Jewish communities like the Ethiopian Jews that date back to First Temple times, more than 2,500 years ago, the Abu Yudaya originated in the decision of a chief to convert to Judaism in the late 19th century in response to colonialism. But their commitment to Judaism is strong and sincere, and this extraordinary coffee program, you can learn more about it by Googling Delicious Peace Coffee. It not only produces great coffee and incredible human cooperation across the boundaries of religious difference, it also has terrific and unusual Jewish music. Play us in this morning, here's a song of the Abu Yudaya. Their Ali Omuyeka, Judaism is my only one, my only faith.
Nina muganzi wange ajomuyeka Desiri na mulala wangulo yomurungi wange
Nina muganzi wange ajomuyeka Desiri na mulala wangulo yomuganzi wange
Ndekanze ne wane kuwange nino murungi wange Mundekeze ne wane kuwange nifono murungi omu
Nina muganzi wange ajomuyeka
Kane panke kubanze ni nomurungi wange Joko mulungi wange moyo yedukita wange Nzenewe mbanga ndwate moyo yedukita wange Newe mbanga njafuwate moyo ye mugaga wange Moyo ye mulungi wange Moyo ye mugaga wange Nsera likire nyo kubanze ni nomurungi wange Sera likire nyo kumanje na funa dokita wange.
That was the Abu Yudaya, the Ugandan Jewish community's song, Ali Omuyeka, You, God, Are My Only One. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish, Mike Wise, is this co-CEO of a fast-growing new initiative to send young married couples to Israel and help them become part of a new cohort within the Jewish community. Learn all about Honeymoon Israel when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
My name is John Ben Asher, and I'm the head of school at the Tucson Hebrew Academy. Tucson Hebrew Academy is a pluralistic kindergarten through eighth grade Jewish day school. We foster educational excellence through an interdisciplinary, integrated general studies and Judaic curriculum. We teach our students to apply Jewish values and learning to everyday life, enabling them to make their community and the world a better place. Our engaging, talented faculty ensure a rigorous, interactive, supportive learning environment. From the early years through comprehensive high school prep, children thrive in THA's uniquely enriching educational community and culture. Our 41-year tradition of excellence continues to produce highly skilled, critical, and creative thinking students with a strong moral compass and deep understanding of Jewish identity, traditions, and values, well prepared for the challenges to come. Tucson Hebrew Academy, thaaz.org, 529-3888.
We are delighted to welcome to Too Jewish this morning our guest, Mike Wise. He's the co-CEO of Honeymoon Israel, a remarkable new program that brings young married couples to Israel. Kind of self-explanatory, but not completely. Good morning and welcome to Too Jewish.
Thank you. It's an honor to be with you today.
Can you tell us where the idea for Honeymoon Israel came from?
In October 2013, the Pew Report on the American Jewish Community was published. And on the day I was reading the study, I was struck by the point that if we're going to be strong as a future Jewish community, the whole issue of intermarriage needed to be addressed differently, and that really what we needed to do was find a way to welcome young couples to be part of the Jewish community, regardless of the makeup of that couple. So whether they were interfaith, somebody had converted to Judaism, or both born Jewish, we now needed to find a way to welcome these couples to being full-fledged members of the Jewish community and no longer define interfaith marriage as a problem, rather an opportunity.
Now, we have been sending, the Jewish world, I guess, in general, has been sending people, in part through major philanthropy, through the Birthright Israel program for a while. Was this kind of sparked by the Birthright program?
Actually, it was more something that had related back to my career as a Jewish Federation and Jewish Community Center professional, where I had led, since the late 80s, numbers of trips of young couples to Israel and really found it a transformational experience for engaging these couples in Jewish life and creating micro communities. And then certainly the concept of birthright helped spur the idea. But it really came from my previous work history and realizing that we had an opportunity now to do something different.
And in sending couples, this is a highly subsidized trip. Can you give us sort of the structure of how it works?
We send couples as long as one of the people in the couple is Jewish. Whatever that might mean. Two, that one of the people in the couple is between 25 and 40, that they're in a lifelong committed relationship as they define it, and generally not married for more than 5 years, and that they both haven't been on a peer trip to Israel, generally meaning birthright. If one was on a trip like Birthright, then we are more than open to having them participate on the trip.
We will talk much more with Mike Wise, the co-CEO of the remarkable Honeymoon Israel program. It's about the journey, in case you weren't too sure. When we come back in just a moment here on Too Jewish. We welcome our friends David and Pamela from Freedom Smoke. Good morning.
Hey,
Good
Rabbi.
Morning.
You have a very wide range of ages in your clientele.
Yes, we do. Anywhere from 18 up to 90.
90. So people who are 90 decide they finally want to quit smoking.
Yes. They want to see their grandchildren or their great-grandchildren graduate high school and get married, go to college, that kind of thing.
It's incredible. What's the oldest person you've ever served?
Me personally, I had one that was 90. Last week, I had one that was 88. He's been with us for a couple of years and very, very pleased with how he quit, and his health is getting much better than it used to be.
You can breathe easier, you can smell things, you can taste things that you haven't been able to do so in years.
It's incredible. Where can people go to find out more information?
You can either visit us at our website at freedomsmokeusa.com, or you can call on our 800 number, 800-705-7013.
And we have 4 stores around the greater Tucson area. We're in Catalina, Sierra Vista, and we're even in southern Michigan.
Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, a kvetch or a kvel, please email us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O Jewish Radio 18. Or visit our website at twojewishradio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website, twojewishradio.com, stream them there, or download them from the Apple iTunes Store's very popular Jewish podcasts. As we approach the presidential nominating conventions over the next 2 weeks, it's a good time to think about what is really important to us as Americans and as American Jews. This has been an election season of rare invective and a great deal of expressed anger and dissatisfaction and not much civility. As we come into this home stretch, I hope that we can turn from the hostility of this process so far to a better, more hopeful tone of intelligent, measured, appropriate exploration of issues and character. That should be the Jewish way and the American way. Ah, but after what we've seen so far, it may take God's active intervention to try to return the discourse to the level of appropriate civility. We have less than 4 months until we elect a new president of these United States. We continue our 2016 Two Jewish Presidential Report. The Democratic Party platform has come out, and while it reflects Palestinian aspirations to a greater degree than ever before, it rejected language calling for Israel to end its occupation of the West Bank and end settlement activity. The platform calls for a two-state solution, but it does not frame it purely as an outcome that benefits Israel, as previous Democratic Party platforms have. It declares that achieving Palestinian statehood would provide the Palestinians with independence, sovereignty, and dignity. The platform drafting committee of the DNC rejected language proposed by James Zogby, a Bernie Sanders appointee to the committee, president of the Arab American Institute. It called for an end to occupation and illegal settlements. Zogby says that Sanders, the Vermont independent senator and the first Jewish candidate to win major nominating contests, helped draft the language. Keeping out language that could potentially alienate the pro-Israel community was a priority to the Clinton campaign, and they succeeded in doing so. J Street, the liberal Jewish Middle East policy group, praised the Israel-related language in the new platform. The language breaks with the party's practice of framing its aim of establishing a Palestinian state solely in terms of Israel's interests, it says. By including parallel acknowledgement of Israeli and Palestinian rights, the party underscores its belief that the only viable resolution to the conflict, a two-state solution, requires recognizing the fates of the two peoples are intertwined. That was our 2016 presidential election from a Jewish perspective update. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
The word colonialism is fraught with all kinds of complex and usually negative meaning in today's intellectual world. And often you'll hear people, particularly in academia, talk about Israel as some kind of colonial state. But that's not what colonialism is or was or how it works. Maybe we can explore that a little bit.
Right. Well, let me just dismiss that part right away. Israel is not remotely a colonialist state, and anybody who says so is just biased or ignorant or both. So end of that story. Colonialism and colonialist and colonial has acquired sort of a negative connotation in much of the world. And that's because I think people's range of experience with colonialization and colonial powers has been so mixed. It covers such a wide range. And even with the same colonial power, there are different reactions and different legacies in different places. I mean, let's take, for example, a lesser-known colonial power, but at one time a very important one, the Netherlands.
Okay, right,
so
the
we
Dutch.
Think of the Dutch as being liberal, jolly, whatever.
Religiously
Protestant,
open, Protestant,
right,
but
traders,
accepting of Jews.
The Protestant ethic, right. And they developed a lot of great trade routes. And at one point, they controlled Indonesia, a country much, much larger than they are.
And really far away.
Right. And a number of ports and little enclaves in India, never very much in Africa.
Caribbean, of course.
Lots of islands in the Caribbean. And what was really interesting to me when I spent time in fairly short succession, like at a 2 or 3 month interval in Curaçao, which is part of the Dutch Antilles, Dutch heritage, Dutch speaking island in the Caribbean, which still has direct flights on KLM, you know, several times a day in jumbo jets
to
Amsterdam and
right.
Curaçao, right.
And also one of the oldest Jewish communities in the New World.
So there, the Dutch are looked on very favorably and viewed with a lot of positive feeling. And then I go to Indonesia and find that the Dutch are reviled and hated. And although there are lots of words in modern Indonesian vocabulary, the language is called Bahasa, which comes straight from Dutch, the Dutch period is regarded with horror as one of terroristic rule and
exploitation, right, brutality.
Right. So, I mean, there's an example of a country that we generally think of in very positive terms, but in at least one of its former colonies is really widely reviled. And another small country adjacent to the Netherlands is Belgium. And Belgium actually had a colonial empire in Africa, sort of three adjacent countries, which are now Zaire, Rwanda, and Burundi. I think Zaire recently changed its name yet again. So it's some other kind of Republic of the Congo now. But in those countries, Belgium is solidly hated. The Belgians were viewed as the worst colonialists who ever came to Africa, worse than the Germans, worse than the Brits, worse than the French. They left no institutional frameworks behind them, very little infrastructure behind them. And what little infrastructure there was, they tried to remove and take with them. So they even like unscrewed the light bulbs and took them back to Europe when they left. They took back toilet paper. They took back pretty much everything. And King Leopold, who created the Belgian Empire in Africa and personally profited enormously from it, was widely recognized as about the worst example of a colonial ruler you could ever find. So then let's look at, you know, two bigger Northern European countries, maybe next week, who were in a worldwide rivalry for most of the 19th century in terms of building empires, Britain and France.
Sounds good. Thanks, Tom. We'll talk next week.
I look forward to it.
We welcome our Mivi non-Israel, Oshrat Barel, head of the Weintraub Israel Center. Boker Tov, Oshrat.
Boker Tov, Rabbi.
When the great first prime minister of Israel, David Ben-Gurion, envisioned the Negev as the future of Israel, I remember the stories he used to walk through parts of the Negev and say, a million people lived here in biblical times, and we'll irrigate it, and this will be the capital. And, you know, it was desert. He saw Beersheba as the future capital, the Negev, and a major city. And for those of us who remember Beersheba in the 1970s or 80s, you know, it was a hot, nothing town. You went through it. They still had camel markets, I think. That's not true anymore.
It's still hot. You can still find camels on the way to Beersheba, but I think it's the closest to Ben-Gurion's vision now. Because of the Ben-Gurion University, and because of a lot of special department in the university, which like it's the only Israeli NGO research center is in Beersheba. A lot of water researches and center is in Beersheba, and there is more than one campus in Beersheba, and there is a lot of new villages, like young villages, next to the new campuses. There is more than one big campus. That's what I'm trying to say.
No, there's a
and
bunch
next
of
to
different
one of the campuses, there is kind of a villages with dorms and young families. And these departments.
And some of them are staying after they finish university or graduate school.
And some of them attract people from all over the world that stay to live in these campuses, dorms, whatever you call them, villages, and actually populate Beersheba with a new population, because 20, 30, 40 years ago, the majority or all the population in Beersheba was new immigrants from North Africa and from other places. Not so much, like I would say, rated like demographic, socioeconomic demographic, low socioeconomic demographic.
Right, it was like a development town.
Yes, but now you can find lots of, it's really attract young families from Israel and from the world, which...
And some of that is because of the insanity of real estate prices in places like Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and Haifa.
Yeah, it's not cheap anymore, but it's cheaper than Tel Aviv.
Right.
And I think that people really like to feel that they live in a village, almost like Tucson, you know, 1 million people village, but still have all the facilities that they can find in Tel Aviv, like... You know, everything from country club to malls to nightclub to bars to restaurants, beautiful chef
teams,
restaurants.
Good
they
arts,
can find everything.
Culture, right.
Like, and the proximity to Eilat. No, it's not so
well,
close.
It's not so close to Eilat, honest, but it's closer than Tel Aviv.
But there is
Jerusalem.
Train that can take you to Tel Aviv easily. Right. So, and I don't know if Jerusalem, but it's not too far
from... So people should invest in real estate in Beersheba, is what we're saying.
I don't know if I...
No, it's true. Maybe it'll be
definitely
the fourth...
to include Beersheba in your next trip to Israel.
That's right, absolutely. It's sort of the fourth city of Israel now.
Video.
Thanks so much,
Rafat. And how will we call it? We already have study in... Oh, so religious study in Jerusalem and secular study in Beersheba.
And secular study in Beersheba. And Ben-Gurion University has really become an extraordinary university.
Nachon.
Thanks, Rafat. We'll talk next week. We welcome our maven on Jewish education, John Ben Asher of Tucson Hebrew Academy. Good morning, John.
Good morning. Boker Tov.
Boker Or. So we're in the middle of summer, and summer means you're not in school usually, and it means you're not necessarily remembering everything you learned.
The brain is kind of off and doing other good things that are important.
Right. I know, like at Temple, we know all the Hebrew we taught them, and they were doing so well. And in May and come August.
And, you know, it's a classic teacher experience, that first week of school when the kids say, "We never learned that. They never taught us this." And of course they did. And
of course.
So what do you do to stop all that brain drain, as we sometimes call it? There's actual research, Rabbi, that shows the loss of retention of knowledge and learning and sometimes skills that happens over a 2 or 3 month break from being out of the system.
Wow.
And there are things you can do to address that.
Oh, good. All right. I've got my pen and paper.
So, kids, if you're listening, you may want to run away. I don't know. It's not really that painful. And moms and dads, I hope that some of these tips come in handy. It's not, again, really rocket science, but it's just getting back engaged with the material. If there are notes from last year, looking over those notes, playing games with Hebrew vocabulary, for example, at home. Have your kids try to stump you about things. So just getting them thinking, you know, getting the cobwebs out and back into the, this is some of the stuff I learned in math. These are some of the vocabulary words I learned in literature. Here's some of the Hebrew that I picked up. And making it fun, finding ways to make it fun. If you have siblings in a family, they can make games for each other. They can quiz each other or teach each other. There are also all kinds of resources that you can buy that are summer friendly. There are fun workbooks, which are terrific for long rides in the car or visits to places where kids might be less engaged than the parents.
Imagine that.
It happens. So they're great, fun resources like that to pick up. And you can get stuff that reviews what was learned in the previous grade, or you can get stuff that talks about what's coming in the next grade level.
So all of that's available, and all you have to do is talk to your school. But there's also a ton of stuff online that you can find, probably, I expect.
For sure, yeah. On an iPad or whatever device, a smartphone, all kinds of apps for practicing your math facts and doing word challenges. You know, there are some cool websites where...
Even Hebrew Hangman.
Yes,
and
you can make crossword puzzles. You know,
wow.
So you can do that with your friends.
Bates, isn't that how you call it?
I don't know, actually.
I think it is.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I'm glad you brought up the internet and digital resources, because there are more of those than you can shake a stick at. It just takes some effort and not a whole lot of digging and research to put something fun together.
So parents and kids, great opportunity to keep everybody fresh. When they go back to school, you will be way ahead of where you are.
And thanks. You'll be glad you did it.
And so will your teachers, I promise. Thanks so much, John. We'll talk next
Thanks.
Week.
Thanks. Have a great day.
When we come back, we'll hear the old Jewish joke of the week here on Too Jewish.
Is your aging loved one unhappy and having a hard time adjusting to life around them? The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker may be able to help. TMC Geropsych specializes in providing short-term inpatient services for older adults experiencing behavioral health issues. Did you know that most people with depression get better when they seek help? With the right treatment, those with anxiety can overcome and learn to cope with their fears, and individuals with dementia can continue leading quality lives. Our team, led by a geriatric psychiatrist, brings expertise from disciplines across a variety of specialties to ensure your loved one receives the right diagnosis and treatment. For more information about our services, please call 324-4600. The TMC Geropsychiatric Center at Handmaker. Call 324-4600. Let's talk about how we can help.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie New, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. Sharon meets her friend Miriam, who has just gone through her third divorce. "Oh, you poor girl," says Sharon. "You must be absolutely shattered. I feel so sorry for you." "Don't worry about me," says Miriam. "I might not be the perfect wife, but I'm a very positive person. I still have great pride in all the things I know how to do very well." "Like what?" asks Sharon. "Well, for example," replies Miriam, "I know I'm a good housekeeper, and I'm very proud to say it." "Please don't take offense," Miriam says Sharon, "but that doesn't sound so important to me." "Oh, to me it's very important," says Miriam, "because whenever I divorce a man, I always keep his house." That was the old Jewish joke of the week, special feature Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well. And now a word of Torah. The news media is filled with reports of religious extremist violence, terrorism, and attempted violence. It's easy to condemn the many horrific examples of murder perpetrated in the name of religion, extremist Islamist massacre and slaughter, or the brutality of other people's twisted acts in the name of a misbegotten faith. But how does Judaism face the issue of religious violence in our own ranks? This week, we read the Torah portion from the book of Numbers, named after a man called Pinchas, whose story began at the end of last week's portion of Balak. The situation is familiar. For the umpteenth time, the people of Israel have been disobeying the Torah and worshiping other gods. This time, the apostasy has reached epidemic proportion. Even the elite leadership of the people has begun to sample the religious wares of the Midianites and Moabites. Finally, one of the princes of the people challenges the authority of Moses publicly by taking a sacred prostitute into his tent while the whole assembly watches. As Moses and the other elders stand by in shock, unable to respond to such a chutzpahdik act, a young Kohen, a priest named Pinchas, steps forward. He kills the wayward prince and his consort and breaks the spell of the religious practice. For this act, he is rewarded by God, which seems to validate his violent vigilantism. But there's more to the story than meets the eye. For Pinchas' reward for killing the couple is a brit shalom, a covenant of peace. Neither he nor any of his descendants is ever again permitted to go to war or carry a spear. He must instead minister to the needs of the tabernacle, the rituals of the altar and the purification and sacrifice, and he can never engage in any more acts of violence. Pinchas has broken the Israelites' latest fascination with paganism, but never again will his level of religious violence be tolerated. It must instead be sublimated to serve the needs of the community. This is an ongoing lesson about the dangers of religious fanaticism. Judaism refuses to countenance the kind of religious insanity that led to the Crusades, or to Jihad, or the Inquisition, or to any kind of religious terrorism. In spite of the occasional anomaly, our religious fervor is never designed to lead to violence. We are committed, fervently and firmly, to the same brit shalom, that same covenant of peace that God placed on Pinchas. We must seek always to channel our fiercest dedication to the service of peace. Religious passion and fervor are essential elements of a truly spiritual life, but religious violence is immoral, not Jewish, and in Torah is expressly forbidden. We can pray that we remember this when we feel goaded to act as others do and are, as very few, but still too many Jews have acted at times. Peace must be our goal, never vigilante slaughter of those who believe differently. And we can continue to pray and teach until all other religious traditions come to see it this way, too. When we come back on Too Jewish, our guest, Mike Wise, the co-CEO of the remarkable new program Honeymoon Israel, will explain just how it came about and what an incredible opportunity it presents for young married couples to go to Israel. Find out how it works when we return in a moment here on Too Jewish.
Hi, Doris. How are you?
Well, Carol, to be honest, now that I'm a little older, I can't get out as much as I'd like. I miss seeing people.
Why don't you come over to my place for lunch on us? The food's delicious. So many choices. And I have a special table with my friends every day. They'd love to have you join us.
Is there much to do there?
There are lots of activities every day. Mondays is Mahjong. Tuesdays, I do yoga. Wednesdays, we go shopping or to the museum or a restaurant.
Thursdays, my exercise class. There are book groups, speakers, Shabbos services, concerts, a game room. I'm busier than ever.
Where do you live?
I'm at Handmaker. And the people are great. Please come over for lunch. You'll love it. It's even kosher. Just call me at 322-7035.
Handmaker Jewish Services for the Aging offers the full spectrum of quality senior living and post-hospital rehabilitative care. Call 322-7035. Handmaker for life. 322-7035. We continue with our Two Jewish Update on news of Jews around the world with commentary from our guest, Rabbi Sandy Seltzer.
Jewish organizations throughout the country have spoken out in the wake of the shooting tragedy in Dallas last week, which claimed the lives of five Dallas police officers. In Dallas itself, the head of the city's Holocaust Museum declared, "We deplore acts of violence and hatred in all forms and urge our country to come together to embrace civil discourse." In New York, the Anti-Defamation League stated, "We have reached out to the Dallas Police Department to convey our condolences." And the Religious Action Center of Reform Judaism in Washington added, "The tragic events of the week remind us that individual, structural, and institutional racism persists in our country with severe consequences. If one death is a tragedy, so many deaths are a plague." In the first trip of a top-level Egyptian diplomat to Israel in 9 years, Egypt's foreign minister, Sameh Shoukry, met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to discuss prospects for the resumption of peace talks between Israel and the Palestinian Authority. The two issued a joint statement in which they spoke of holding lengthy talks regarding bilateral relations and regional developments. But they agreed that the resolution of Palestinian issues was of the utmost importance and took precedence over other matters. A team of archaeologists from the University of North Carolina, working in cooperation with the Israel Antiquities Authority, has announced a startling discovery that was made during the excavation of the floor of a synagogue dating back to the 5th century of the Common Era. There, fully preserved, was a model of Noah's Ark, including representations of the various animal groups entering the Ark, in keeping with the story in the book of Genesis. In addition, there was a depiction of the parting of the Red Sea and the chariots of Pharaoh being overwhelmed as the waters closed over them, as described in the book of Exodus. The professor in charge of the dig said, "Such scenes are extremely rare in ancient synagogues. What we have here is by far the most extensive series of biblical events ever found decorating the mosaic floor of an ancient Jewish house of worship." The oldest living American on record, a Jewish woman named Goldie Michelson, has died in her home in Worcester, Massachusetts, a month before her 114th birthday. Born in Russia, Mrs. Michelson was brought here by her parents at the age of 2. She had a lifelong passion for the theater, both as a patron and as a participant, and as such, had a small theater built in the basement of her Worcester home where performances were actually held, and which included a stage, footlights, and even an actor's dressing room. And that's the Two Jewish News.
We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning, Mike Wise. He's the co-CEO of Honeymoon Israel and co-founder, I might add. He served as CEO, executive director of the Jewish Federation of Greater Buffalo and was a CEO of the JCCs of Greater Atlanta, also in Akron, Ohio, has had a lifetime of serving Jewish communal interests in America. Honeymoon Israel makes it as easy as possible for couples to go. You mentioned at least one of the partners has to be Jewish. Can they both be Jewish?
Absolutely. We want our groups, and all groups are community-based. So it's 20 couples from the same community, or two communities close by each other. As long as we want it to be a reflection of what the community of that cohort looks like, of that age group. So in today's world, it generally means around 65% of the couple are interfaith, 15 to 20% of them are where somebody's gone through conversion, and another about 15, 20% are both born Jewish.
And they have to be between the ages of 25 and 40, or at least one of the partners does?
Correct. We really want to engage couples earlier on in their life. The average age of our participants is around 32.
Those numbers are because you're trying to create cohorts of kind of similarly aged couples who are then likely to be connected to the Jewish community?
Correct. We're really looking to create social networks of like-minded couples. So people who are at the same stages in life, trying to figure out how religion's going to play a role in their lives. Many of them are beginning to have families or think about families, and figuring out the role of Judaism and how they relate to Judaism as a family.
How do you staff the trip and to sort of assist couples in those conversations?
So every cohort is staffed with two local professionals, one being a Jewish educator, that could be a rabbi, a cantor, a professional Jewish educator in one of the local communities, and the other being a Jewish communal professional working, whether it be a JCC, a federation, a synagogue within the communities, so that the participants have somebody to relate to when they get home, somebody who can do follow-up programming with these couples when they get home. Because Honeymoon Israel is really about creating this amazing, wonderful trigger experience. But the key is what happens when the couples come home. So about building sustaining micro communities for these couples. So having local professionals is really an important component of the trip and everything we're doing.
And how many trips are you guys planning? I see on the website something like 20 trips in the next year.
Yeah, we have at least 20 to actually 30 or more trips in the next year planned. Again, they're all community-based. And we're adding new communities all the time. So we'll be in 12 or so communities in the next year, and then 16, and then 20 communities within 2 to 3 years. And within 3 years, we'll probably be doing 50 trips a year, or about 2,000 participants a year.
How many trips have you run so far?
So we've run 14 trips that represent about 550 people from 8 different communities. We are getting about 4 applications, 3 to 4 applications for every spot we have. And that's without doing any kind of marketing or advertising. So to say the least, we're having amazing response to our program and the idea of Honeymoon Israel.
So I first heard about it when I got a phone call from your community outreach person. It's great to be able to have you here on Too Jewish. This will absolutely make sure that the entire world knows about it going forward. But how is this marketed more generally, and is it, or is it just being circulated by word of mouth? People hear about it and they get excited.
It's interesting that our primary marketing platform has been Facebook. That Facebook is so ubiquitous in the world today that through our posts, through alumni posts, the word is really getting out there. That additionally, it's rabbis and cantors who are officiating at Jewish weddings, and then articles here and there where, frankly, Jewish mothers see it and talk to their children about, hey, saw this wonderful opportunity for you as a couple to go to Israel for $1,800. So we haven't spent a whole lot of money on
marketing.
Advertising.
So it costs a lot more than $1,800 to send a couple to Israel. How was the philanthropy created, and are there major donors that are making this possible?
We're very fortunate that we put our idea, my co-partner Avi Rubel and I posted a little article on e-Jewish philanthropy, and we were kind of discovered by a family foundation that really believed in young couples the way we did. And they have been very generous in supporting our startup, our first 3 years of funding, and we're expanding our national philanthropy, and local communities are investing quite heavily in the post-trip programming. So it's been a wonderful partnership with our local community partners. The full cost for a couple is around $5,000 a couple. So these couples pay $1,800 and are getting a $10,000 five-star trip to Israel.
It's an extraordinary idea. The criticism that we've heard about Birthright, and so many positives, but the criticism has been the follow-up or the ability to create the cohorts. You guys are kind of starting with that in mind and designing the trip in that way. You haven't been doing this for terribly long, but what have the results been in terms of the follow-up?
Well, very much our DNA is very much built around what happens when they get home. We're working, trying to build various models for that, but we've had a research firm deeply embedded with us from our very first day. And we're finding that these couples are coming home, creating these very significant, very tight communities of Honeymoon Israel alum in their home communities, and getting together to, whether it's have Shabbat dinner together, go to a concert, read a book, Jewish book groups. Some groups are deciding to learn Hebrew, and this is with 40% of our participants not being of the Jewish faith. So it's been pretty extraordinary what's happened post-trip. And unlike Birthright, these folks are at a very different place in life, that they're all, the cohorts are locally based. So they're able to see each other rather than college students who are then going home and going off somewhere else. So we have a distinct advantage in the post-trip programming of being locally based and dealing with with adults at a different stage of life.
So tell us how you run the trip. I've led some trips to Israel myself. Tell us, do you work your way around to Jerusalem? Is there a plan? Is it carefully designed to brainwash people, or is it a little bit more open?
We like to believe we don't have an agenda, and that we're bringing smart adults on the trip, and we want to present many, many facets of what Israel is about and use the challenges of Israel as models for people's individual lives. All trips leave on a Thursday, arrive in Israel Friday morning, Friday afternoon, so that they have two Shabbat experiences, one in Jerusalem, one in Tel Aviv. Groups start in different locations, spend 2 days up north, will spend generally 4 days in Jerusalem, 3 days in lots of touring, lots of the regular sites of Israel, Masada, the Dead Sea,
Yad Vashem,
the Old City. We take people to see the Christian sites. We will take groups to meet with Arab Israelis and understand the issues of being a minority within Israel. We'll explore the issues of the Palestinians. So we give people a chance to learn, to explore, to understand the struggles of everyday life in Israel. We stay in five-star hotels. They have 4 to 5 evenings on their own to go out for dinner with other couples, to just walk on the beach. Just really enjoy their time. We build in some conversations for them to be talking about and processing what the experience is about, but they do it with a glass of wine in hand, in a relaxed setting. So it's really been extremely well received from that perspective.
What's your favorite moment so far in creating Honeymoon Israel?
Kind of that final Shabbat where these couples talk about what it's done for them as a couple, how it's impacted on their relationship, their personal connection to Judaism, their connection to each other. And then you go home and you come back and visit them, and it's really, they've all become family. We've become, you know, very, very close to these young couples who are really the future of the Jewish community and really incredible people. And it gives me tremendous hope as somebody who's been a Jewish professional for over 35 years that there's a great future for the American Jewish community.
We certainly believe so, and we can see that Honeymoon Israel is playing a role in that and working not only with interfaith couples to connect them to Israel, but connect them to each other, to the Jewish community in general. I want to thank Mike Wise for a great visit here on Too Jewish. The website is honeymoonisrael.org, just like you think it would be spelled. Anything else that people should know?
Please go to the website. Feel free to contact us through the website, and we are growing quickly and look forward to being in every major Jewish community in America.
We do too. Thanks so much, Mike. When we come back on Too Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest, get a final musical playout.
For 100 years, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has been known for their compassionate commitment to all the families of our community. Known as the most beautiful final resting place in southern Arizona, Evergreen serves all faiths. Their experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox is second to none. From traditional services to the unique, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best. To speak to a family advisor, call 888-7470, 888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Too Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next Sunday. Our guest will be Rabbi Rebecca Einstein Shore, the editor of a new book, The Sacred Calling, 4 Decades of Women in the Rabbinate. Our playout this morning comes from the Abu Yudaya, the Ugandan Jewish community, a setting of Psalm 150. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, and a week, we pray, of peace.
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.